Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Play. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the 2021 Waste Management Open. You can find myself on Twitter at BDentric, my co-host on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods, and the podcast at Always Press DFS. But as I said, my co-host, Jesse, how are we doing, man?
I'm doing well, dude. How you doing?
I am doing well. Another beautiful day, another tournament in the books, another Patrick Reed event. It was so much fun. Like, part of me is mad because I said last week, these are the events he plays well in. Wouldn't be shocked if he does well, but I'm not going to play Patrick Reed. What's Patrick Reed do? He goes out and wins the darn thing, but I don't even think that's the whole story. So what's your thoughts on the weekend at the Farmers?
It was definitely something, especially after, you know, Saturday evening, and then, which obviously spilled over into Sunday. I'm sure everybody has seen the video and knows about it by now, especially since, just going to go off a little tangent here, CBS decided that a 14-point college basketball game spills over into the coverage, of course. I mean, let's not get off of that game with a minute to go, and it's a 14-point game, and there's zero chance that Michigan State's going to win. But anyway, so they come on, what time, at like 3:15? And like for 15 straight minutes, not one golf shot, they're getting everybody's take on, you know, what happened the day before. And I'm like sitting there going like, what the fuck are y'all doing? Like, it's just baffling to me. Like, okay, if you're going to talk about it, fine, that's fine. Show me some shots. Like, literally, Patrick Reed just made a 50-foot eagle putt, and then he turned around on the next hole and made like a 20-foot birdie putt. So he's like up. And what are we doing? Anyways, Patrick, man, so the only thing that gets me about the whole Reed deal, and then I'll listen to your take on it, is it looks sketch to me. He did everything right. So he didn't do anything wrong per se, other than, you know, pick his ball up and then palming it. And, yeah, you know, but that's not a penalty because he got relief. So it didn't even end up mattering, but you're supposed to pick it up and just, you know, he picks it up, and I don't know what the hell he was doing over there. I wish we had a front view of it, but to me, it just looked like to me, there was a little bit of a pressure applied there into the ground. I don't know that to me, he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt because he is who he is, you know? And he's never going to get the benefit of the doubt. His wife can get on her burner account all day, every day. It doesn't matter. She's not going to talk anybody down. I don't know why she wastes her energy on it. But you know, that's where I'm at with, did it end up mattering?
No,
no, it didn't. Cause he played outstanding the next day. He uses that type of shit.
Yep.
He's like, I think it was JJ, Killeen, at West Texas Tour Pro or whatever, the dude who is basically trying to Monday Q all the time, but he's also really obviously a pro. But long story short, he said he has no soul.
I believe it.
You know,
if you watch the way he does things, even, you know, you remember back to when he was messing with the sand back in the day.
Yeah,
like there's
wasn't cameras, that long ago.
No, there's cameras right on this stuff, and he's like, yeah, no. Like it obviously bounced. I mean, to give him the benefit of the doubt, he couldn't have seen that it bounced.
Right. Probably. No, 100%.
So he's going off the word of the person there. Okay, cool. Was it cheating? Probably. But the way I look at it is, yeah, you said he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. He's already screwed to begin with. I love Patrick Reed. For those that listen to the show enough or follow me on Twitter, I love Taco Tits. I am a big fan. I embrace, like, I'm a 90s kid that grew up on WWF. So I appreciate him going full heel. Like, just, like, hate me. Like you said, he feeds off of it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's absolutely, it's amazing to watch it happen. Like, if there was fans there, I think he probably would have shot 1,700. Like, he loves that kind of atmosphere. And then, you know, it got beaten to the ground that night and all this stuff. So that's why it was really annoying. They brought it up again the next day. What I found funny is because CBS took such a hard stance, so did Golf Channel on Saturday, showing the videos, the way they were talking on air, like burning them into the ground. One of the first clips they show on Saturday is Rory doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, are they trying to justify what Pat did, or are they trying to say, like, where are we going with this now?
So, you know, the only reason that guy brought
it up? Because Reed brought it up.
Right. Well, his wife friends.
Sorry. Yeah. My bad. Yes. She has two Twitter accounts, apparently. So that's good.
Minimum. Yes. Patrick Reed is not on Twitter. He's not tweeting. No,
she doesn't.
Patrick Reed doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care what anybody thinks about him. I think that's pretty obvious at this point.
He probably has no idea what takes place on Twitter at all. Like, no
right. Problem. And to be honest with you, I kind of like that about the guy. He doesn't care. Mm-hmm. But golf is a game where cheaters traditionally are ostracized and they're made fun of because it's a game of, you know, you keep your, you know, you have integrity in the game. And so he just likes to toe that line, man. And, you know, I don't know. So if you go back to that video, you look at about 23 seconds in, to me, it looks like he's kind of putting some pressure down or whatever. I don't know. So anyways, but again, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. We can go back and forth on it all day. But like you said, in the end, he got it done. Yeah. And the last thing I'll say on it is, you know, he could be cheating as much as he wants. As long as the tour lets him get away with it, as long as they, like, all this stuff – you can't get mad. Like, he's going to keep doing it. So, Xander coming out and getting all pissy about it. And, you know, the other guys are probably thinking it, but they're not saying anything because Rory did the same thing. Like, these guys are all – they're cheating as much as they can without getting caught. Don't act like none of them are. they're all doing it. Like, not to that blatancy part of it, but they're doing – they're stretching the limits to everything they can do.
I give all of them the benefit of the doubt except for Patrick Reed.
You expect him to do it now.
I just can't give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, it's just his track record. But, I mean, Rory's ball, I'm assuming that happened way more times than you saw on TV as far as somebody hit in the rough. Yeah, it was wet. You know, somebody hit in the rough. You know, and really, if you think about it, did it really even improve his lie much? I mean, he still dropped it in that fucking rough.
Right. He still couldn't see his ball.
Right. I mean, it's not like he gained that big of an advantage. He didn't get to go to a different grass type or height or anything. So, but either way, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's sketch. That's the best way for me to put it. It's sketchy.
Patrick Reed. That's what it is. So, you know, Victor Hovland got close, couldn't putt towards the end.
Absolute collapse coming down the stretch.
Three putting within like 3 feet. Finau finding the drink. There was a lot of butt puckering moments that did not work out for guys.
Let's talk about Finau for a second. First of all,
if you guys could see our chat that we have,
if you follow us on Twitter too, though, we obviously do this one and done thing, which If you're not familiar with one and done, basically pick one golfer and you can't use them the rest of the year for each tournament. And we've never had a week where the four of us, is it four or five of us? Me, you. It's
five of us. Now.
Or the five of us pick the same golfer. Yeah. So we all five pick Finau, which is insane. And he was by far the highest picked in
big time.
And like, I know Mayo's one and done or whatever. And
carbon contest, I think he was like 2-1 almost.
The fact that he topped, you know, he got a second place finish to me is just
gravy.
Insane. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he had a terrible shot in on 18. It didn't really matter. I mean, you think about it. If he somehow makes an eagle putt, which, I mean, like, that's assuming that he's going to make a putt, which is a really bad assumption. You know, he's 12 under and he loses by two.
Yeah, but he blew so many chances. He'd birdie and get our hopes up, and then he bogey, like, easiest putts. Well, looks easy on TV. I know it's tougher than
right.
Stuff you expect pros to make,
right.
He couldn't make. Between him and Rory, like, if either one of them could have putt, they'd probably beat Pat by, like, five strokes this week.
It's funny. It was funny that they were talking about Rory and about the fact that he couldn't putt, and I was just sitting there thinking, like, this is fucking Rory. What are you talking about? Like, this is nothing. Like, the only time he's ever putted well in my mind – that I can think of was the
Bay Hill,
yeah, at the Arnold Palmer.
He ran away with it
when he gained like 10 shots putting or something and won by 47 shots. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't putt well on a week to week basis. This is nothing new. Like, it's surprising when he putts well. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with Finau. Like, does Finau ever putt well? No. But either way, yeah, I'm surprised Hovland collapsed like he did coming down the stretch. But I did see something where, like, people said that. You know, he does get nervous and he hasn't learned to control his emotions, even though he's a 2-time winner on the PGA Tour. So maybe that has something to do with it there. But I mean, it's a great tournament. It's a lot of fun to watch.
We could pick apart so much of it because it was fun. Like, there's a lot of players involved and guys making runs and all this stuff, some missed cuts. The last thing I'll ask you, though, is we know that they're going to be back here for the U.S. Open, and it's already pretty nasty looking rough-wise. You can see where they're bringing in the fairways even more and stuff. How crazy do you think it's going to be? Like, we saw the scores on the South Course get brutal, and the weather wasn't that bad. Like, are we thinking this is, like, even par is a great score over at this deal?
I think it'll be interesting to see how much rain they get for the next few months or whatever. Typically, moving into the dry season, I guess, really around probably, what, starting in March? I mean, I'm not super familiar with the climate down in San Diego. Yeah. But it'll be a lot tougher. I mean, it'll be fun to watch because those greens were slick. They finally got them slicked up on Sunday. So they will be dry and slick, assuming that the weather cooperates or whatever with the USGA. But looking down some of those fairways, man, yeah, if they narrow some of that shit down, buddy. And you know that the fucking rough is just going to be gnarly.
It was already penal this week. Like, it's going to be probably three times as high.
I would think it's going to be at least it's going to be thicker probably,
yeah.
and then also higher. So it's
And my buddy lives close to the course, and he I was joking with him. I said, "God, that course looks beautiful." And he goes, "Well, I played it 2 weeks ago, and I'm playing it again Wednesday." So he's supposed to give me a kind of an idea of how things look out there. He plays it probably once a month, apparently.
It is a muni, right?
Yeah, and locals get discounts. As a local, you can play the South Course for $78. And you can play the North Course for $58. And he says the North Course is just as beautiful.
Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah, he plays it all the time. So it's pretty good stuff. But enough with the Farmers. Great tournament. Looking forward to it next year. We move on to Phoenix to the Waste Management Open. Another loaded field. Like, every week, it's like we're waiting for that drop off we're used to getting. Not this year. This thing is jam packed. A lot of first timers. What do you have for some past event history for the Waste Management Open?
Yeah, obviously. Used to be called the Phoenix Open. Either way, it had been played at TPC. What is it? TPC what? Phoenix?
Scottsdale.
I knew it was the name. I blanked out. Last year, Webb Simpson, 17 under, wins in a playoff over Tony Finau. Imagine that. I mean, if Tony doesn't win this week, I'd be surprised.
He's not in it this week.
I
think he went over to Dubai.
You mean Saudi Arabia?
Saudi Arabia, yeah. I think he's over there with a bunch of those boys.
Yeah. There's a lot of money to be made over there. I don't blame him. Ricky Fowler, 17 under the year before that, so 2019, two shots over Brandon Grace. Gary Woodland was your 2018 champion, 18 under, playoff over Chez. Hideki won it back-to-back 2016, 2017, both in playoffs. 2017 was over Webb Simpson. in 2016 was over Ricky Fowler. Brooks Koepka was the 2015 champion. Kevin Stadler won this in 2014, which Kevin Stadler made the cut last week.
Yes.
And he finished dead last, but he still made money. Yep. Phil Mickelson, three-time champion, holds the tournament record 28 under par. He did that in 2013 en route to his win over Brant Snedeker by four shots. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're at there.
Yeah, like you said, most of the scoring around 17 under par, give or take. 132 players in the field this week, so not a full field, but a pretty loaded field, T65 and ties. The difference compared to normal is, and for any other tournament, there are going to be fans this week. They're saying 5,000 fans per day, so it won't be the 200,000 or whatever we're used to getting every day on the weekends where they jam pack it. Because I was
going to build the stadium.
See, I'm assuming they have it up just for at least aesthetics purposes, but I don't know how they're going to feel like, does all 5,000 go in there? Do they space them out because of social? I have no idea how they're going to do that. But I was at this event last year on a Friday, and it was pretty much the last good thing I got to do before all hell broke loose. And the best way I can give the course report, it's very gettable. It's very, very gettable. It's if you're a professional golfer that can hit the ball straight for the most part, it's very gettable. There's a few trees here and there that can get you in trouble, but not much. Fairways are about average, a little above average for width. The rough is not penal. The biggest penal parts is there's a couple water hazards that like it's like 15, I think, five share or something. Like, there's a couple hazards that two or three holes share at a time. But, you know, one of them's on a par five, I believe 15. So it makes guys debate laying up or not. But otherwise, it's really not a challenging golf course. There are bunkers in place that they've added in 2014 to kind of make it a little more difficult. But it's all about the stadium hole on 16, which is a lot of fun. 17 is a drivable par four. The par fives are pretty gettable. And then 18, it's a fun hole because I remember watching a lot of guys tee off on that Friday, and it came into play when Finau and Webb were going at it on Sunday last year. There's the coffin bunkers on the left and the right, and you can either try to clear the ones on the left and get way down there, or you do what Webb does, and it's just three wood, and it's landed in the fairway and takes a longer iron in. So it's kind of strategy involved there. Finau got in trouble. Webb didn't in the story, but Webb putted his ass off too. So there's no doubting that. But it's a less-than-driver course for the most part, par 71, 7,261 yards. But bombers do have an advantage here because the greens are usually very, very fast. So you want to be closer so you can wedge it and drop it in type thing. That's what a lot of the reports are. You don't have to. It's just easier for your overall gameplay. Bermuda greens are TIF Eagle Bermuda, so they're not completely 100% Bermuda, but they're pretty normal stuff. The native areas get you in trouble. There's cactus and all kinds of stuff out there. But overall, very gettable golf course. Not usually a lot of big numbers thrown out there. But and 132 golfers instead of 156, the cut line should be a little lower than normal. I think I was reading like minus one or even is kind of the average cut line there. But very, very fun event. I'm looking forward to seeing how the stadium plays without a packed house the whole time. So what stats are you looking at?
A lot of just tee to green stuff. Approach, I think, is good. Plenty of course history. So weight that quite a bit this week, too.
Yeah, course history is tremendous. They played with this course since 1987. So yep. Lots of history here. Obviously, some of these guys weren't even born then, but that's another story. FanshareSports.com. Use promo code ALWAYSPRESS for 20% off the package of your choice. Guys coming in good current form over the last five events. In this field, Justin Thomas leads the way when it comes to DraftKings scoring, followed by Xander. Ryan Palmer is averaging over 105 DK points per event over the last five events. That's impressive. John Robb, Webb Simpson, Daniel Berger. So your usual suspects there. There's really Chris Kirk and Patton Kizzire are 9th and 10th on the list. Those would probably be the names that kind of stand out the most as like, okay, interesting. When you look at par 71s, I did 7,000 to 7,200 because it's 7,261, but I figured it's close enough. Last 10 events when it comes to DK scoring, Rory McIlroy, Max Homa, Matt Kuchar does very well at these events. You got guys like Daniel Berger does well here. Joel Dahman does well here, but like Bo Hogg, Steve Stricker, not big hitter type stuff. And then last 10 events on Bermuda, Webb Simpson, Xander, JT, Rory, Berger, English, Rahm. You just keep going by the big names. So as you'd expect, it's a loaded field. So the big names will do well. So when we look at past event history, we also kind of have to think it's a little different in the fact it's a lot more packed compared to normal. And it shows in the DraftKings pricing because the DraftKings pricing is There's a couple spots that may be like triple check. Like, are we really doing this? Like Kevin put a sample lineup in the chat, and I'm like, I agree with all of that, and that terrifies me. So it's going to be an interesting build week. So let's just kick it off here. 10K and above, Jesse. John Rahm, 11-2. Xander, 11. JT, 10-8. Rory, 10-6. Webb, 10-1. What do you like in here?
Just start with John Rahm. Never finished worse than 16th at this event. 9th last year, 10th year before, 11th year before that. So if you go by that, he should finish at least 8th this year, I would imagine, probably right on the number there. And then obviously three straight 7th place finishes and a second place finish in his last four. I mean, just playing really well. His putter let him down pretty bad this past weekend, which, again, is another one of those guys who, you know, he's up and down with the putter, but he's got the game to figure it out. And then for me, Rory at 10-6, never played here. He hit the ball really well last week, just like Rory normally does. And then, like I talked about before, his putter let him down. So, you know, it's just, again, how Rory is. Those are the two main guys I'm focusing on up here. If you wanted to go to anybody else, I wouldn't blame you. Xander had a great weekend and has some pretty good course history. JT, you know, he's two straight top threes at this event. You know, Webb's the defending champion. Plenty of guys up top here. Who you got?
Yeah, it's pretty wide open play who you want type thing, and there's value to be had. So you can plug and play here. I love the Rombo call. There's nothing not to like about him. And Xander, I think 11,000 is a good pivot, because I think if you're paying up that high, you're going to Rahm all the way. So I think Xander's an interesting pivot, because I think you're going to want either Rory at 10-6 or Rahm at 11-2 are going to be kind of the popular ones here. I think at least Xander at 11,000, nice and low owned. So I'm intrigued by Xander. But if I'm coming up here, like the guy I want the cheapest one in the group, because I like all these guys. Give me Webb, the defending champion. He lost in a playoff a few years ago, like you mentioned. He's got phenomenal course history at $10,100, a first, 20th, miscut, second, 14th, 10th, 8th, 8th. Like, he plays phenomenal. Coming off of fourth place his last time out. There's not a lot to not like about Webb Simpson. Of course, he doesn't have to pound the driver. He can putt well on Bermuda. I think if all these guys can win and you can make cases for all of them, I'll take the cheapest one at 10-1 if I'm going to come up here. So give me Webb at 10-1. Take whoever you want, though. 9K range, this is another reason why I'm not super stoked about the five price category, the 10K and above. The 9K range is fun. Matsuyama, 98. Berger is somehow 96 in this field. Sungjae, 94. Harris English, 93 off that wonderful, wonderful week he had at the Farmers. Palmer at 92. Scheffler, 91. And your boy, Willie Z, 9,000. So what do you like in this 9K range?
Excuse me. We'll start with Hideki up top. So when he's not withdrawing, you know, he's finishing inside the top 16, 16th, 15th. That, I remember that WD in 2018. It was like in the infancy of kind of one and done too. And I think everybody one and done them, and then he withdrew. First, second, fourth. I mean, the guy just he's played his lights out here. You know, coming in at his form, not that great, but it's just one of those places where I don't really care as much. I do think he'll be popular, though. I do like Berger quite a bit at 96. Ninth here last year, miscut the year before, 11th, 7th, 58th, 10th since 2015. Two straight top 10s for him, both over in Hawaii. Hasn't played since then, but whatever. Sungjae, hard to believe he's in the field. I mean,
did you see his back nine on Sunday?
Yeah, dude. Did you see his front nine? Did you see his front?
That was amazing.
I mean, I don't know.
He was in contention.
What did he end up shooting? Shot like 31 on the front. And so he finished 42.
Finished 32nd.
Well, no, he finished with the 73. So I'm just saying, gotcha. 42 on the back, maybe.
Pretty rough.
I mean, he was charging, dude. He was up there. Like, they were starting to take notice of him on the Golf Channel coverage. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, he was just right off a fucking cliff. But anyway, Sungjae, 9,400 every week. Let's, you know, you guys hear me talk about him all the time. Will Zalatoris, 9,000. I saw something interesting on Twitter.
You don't say.
Yeah, it was Justin Ray. At Justin Ray Golf, Will Zalatoris, 14th this past weekend, 14th top 10 finish worldwide since the beginning of 2020.
It's impressive.
Most of any player. I mean, that's, you know, worldwide start, so that's Corn Ferry, whatever else, because he's not played a whole heck of a lot. Did you see him this week? Did you see when they showed him on TV?
Yeah, I love the meme I saw that said, I didn't know that Happy Gilmore's caddy made it to the PGA Tour.
I didn't. When I picture, like, it's funny because when I start playing guys like this, you know, I'll picture him in my head or whatever, and then once I see him, it's like it's never the same. Because I want them really all to look like Brooks Koepka, to be honest with you. But there's only one. But Will Zalatoris, I mean, playing really good golf. I mean, the thing is you're not going to get him at low ownership. So just go ahead and, you know, talk, you know, consider that. You know, he was 17% owned last week, 15% owned at the Mayakoba, 37% owned at the Bermuda. The guy's not going under the radar. He's never gone under the radar. But he's playing really good golf. I mean, that seventh place finish last week is impressive. All four rounds under par at Torrey Pines.
It's very good.
Yeah. And, you know, to be right there in the mix. I mean, I've really like had my eye on him since he was in junior high. And so now that, you know, he's in on the PGA Tour, you know, I'm really excited to get to tout him.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm glad you've been on the whole time. That's good stuff. For me, I do love Berger at 96. Like, I saw that price tag first thing, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Berger at 96 is just criminal. So I'm going to be jumping on that train. Willie Z's great at 9,000. But the two guys in the middle that I think are very intriguing, and it kind of paid off last week. I know I didn't use them in my core, but I used them in my Cascades, guys that missed cuts that were chalky. So Harris English at 93, I want to go right back to. Like, he played horrible the first day on the South Course. It ate his lunch. Part of it could be he played with J.B. Holmes. Just put that in mind. That makes a lot of people put like crap. But 16th, missed cut, 57th, 3rd, 40th, 9th. He's missed two cuts, made like seven cuts here. I think it's an interesting bounce back spot at very low ownership for English at 93. And then it's hard to not enjoy a low-priced Ryan Palmer yet again, because the dude is just being nuclear right now. He came up on all the fanshare stuff. He's $9,200. People don't want to pay $9,200 for him. He finished second last week, or tied second last week, 41st and 4th to start off the season here. He's coming up, and his course history is not good. So that'll really lower his ownership. Miscut, 60th, miscut, 24th, 2nd, 48th, 5th. So he has contended here, but last three missed cuts in the last 4 years, not ideal for Ryan Palmer. But it's kind of like what we've talked about with some other golfers. The Palmer in the recent years does not feel like the Ryan Palmer we have right now. Like, this seems like a totally different guy that I used to make fun of to only play like no cut events, because he's going to blow up for a day, which usually would miss a cut for you elsewhere. Right now, he's getting it done. So I think he's a nice low owned GPP play, English as well as a bounce back candidate. But Berger at 96, that seems like a criminal price tag to me in this field. All right, 8K range, Usti at 89 is going to be a phenomenal pivot off of Willie Z. Brooks at 88, which is weird to see. Pay attention to see if Matt Wolf's still in the event, as he withdrew last week. He's 87. Fowler's 86. Bubba's 85. Billy Ho, 84. Woodland, 83. Henley, 82. Siwoo, 81, just 2 weeks off of a W. Harmon, 8,000. This range right here, a lot of other weeks would not be in the 8K range. So this is really confusing. What do you like here?
Yeah, there's plenty of guys, obviously, right here in this range. Louis Oosthuizen, 8,900. Third place finish here in 2017 in his only start. Coming off a made cut to Farmers, he finished 29th. Three out of the four rounds under par. He started in even par on Thursday, whichever course he played there. But like him, Brooks, I mean, at 88, we're gonna put Brooks down at 80. I know he's coming off three straight missed cuts. Is he hurt? I don't understand.
I don't think he is, because, you know, I of course follow him and his girlfriend on Instagram, and I watch their feeds, and he looks healthy when they're doing other stuff. So I'm assuming he's fine. He took all that time off to get healthy. His whole goal, he's talked about in interviews, is getting right for the majors. So maybe just, you know, all that time off, the injury and everything, he wasn't there, so he's working on things. But these price tags, they keep lowering his price. Eventually he's going to pop and just crush them.
So, like, you know, just for example, last year, like, obviously at the Masters, he finished 7th. Before that, he was 5th at the Houston Open. That was before these three straight missed cuts. I mean, the last time he was below 9,000 was, it wasn't 2019. Let's see. I mean, it's been since, okay, the Bridgestone Invitational in 2018. He was 8,900, finished fifth, by the way. Not that that matters, but I mean, it's been that long since he's been below 9K. It's odd. I don't know what to do with him. You know, if I'm playing a lot of lineups, I definitely play some Brooks.
Yeah.
I don't think he's single entry, three entry max worthy at this point, unless you just want to gamble. You want to put him on a team in a three entry max or even in a single entry. I would think he would still be low owned, but it's odd. I just don't know really what to do because three straight missed cuts for him is not normal, but I'm sure he gets it right.
Going out, but he keeps going out there. So
I'm with you. Yeah, I mean, he's working on something, doing something. Yeah. Matt Wolf, dude. I mean, I played him last week. That was fucking tilting. I don't understand why he's still in the field if he was, in fact, hurt. I mean, obviously, he played terrible. He wasn't going to make the cut. But I'm confused because he said it was his hand, right? Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. I would steer clear of him. Billy Horsley, 8,400. Another guy I played a shit ton of last week. Solid little 76 out the gate. Tried to bring it back, but just couldn't get there on Thursday. Missed the cut. So if you go back before that missed cut at the Sony Open, 7th, 24th, tournament champions, not 5th before that, Mayakoba. I mean, he's got two top 10s in his last really, you know, two like cut event starts before the missed cut. I think you'll get him at lower ownership. I'm going back to Billy this week. Still has me blocked on Twitter, by the way.
Out of all the people that block you, like, unbelievable.
Don't tilt his putter on Twitter, just tilt it in your mind. Gary Woodland started hot last week, did not play well really on Friday or Saturday. Solid little 70 coming in on Sunday. I mean, I'm just gonna have to keep playing him, I guess. I mean, his course history here is he's got a win, obviously, a seventh place finish, but before that, he was like kind of miscut, made cut. It's kind of mixed, but very good too at the same time, if that's possible. That's all I got.
All right. I love the Oosty play for a GPP, obviously, because if Willie Z is as popular as he's going to be, Oosty's going to have no ownership. And he usually doesn't have any ownership. So I like him at 8,900 bucks. A play that I'm going to have way too much of, and I mentioned it in the Slack chat today, I mentioned it in our chat today, is Bubba Watson. Coming off the missed cut last week, but at this tournament, 3rd, 4th, 40th, missed cut, 14th, 2nd, 2nd, 15th, 5th. Yeah, like we know Bubba likes certain courses. Just looking at that course history, pretty darn good. His ball striking's the best in the field right now over the last since this season started. I'm just going off the numbers I see in front of me. Just going to throw that one out there. I was surprised to see that as well. When I opened the ball striking tab, when you combine tee to green and approach, the total, he is leading the field. So that surprised me as well. So, Bubba at 85, I'm going to have way too much of. Like I'm debating using him for one and done. It is terrifying me right now. But we've seen this story before with Bubba Watson. So I'll jump on that train at 85. I love the Billy Ho call. I'll be back on him as well at 84, similar to my Harris English thoughts. A guy that you know a lot of us liked last week, missed the cut. You're going to get him at super low ownership. He's played well here. He's played well before last week. I'll jump back on that train as well. Woodland as well, 83. We've talked about him for the last few weeks. Keep riding that train while he's affordable. I think that's a very good play as well. And then a couple others I had here because I love this 8K range. Like I might just make a full 8K lineup. Russell Henley intrigues me. Not the greatest course history here. It's literally missed cut, 15th missed cut, 16th missed cut, made cut, missed cut, made cut. So a few patterns, he's going to make the cut this year. But he's coming with a missed cut and an 11th so far this season. One of the better approach players in the game. So I think if he can get it right, there's not a lot of hazards to worry about here. Could be a good bounce back for Henley. Then the other guy, also not great course history, but he's coming off a freaking W. Missed the cut last week. He's missed three of the last four cuts here at this event. So maybe it's just a bad idea, but I think for kind of like your Brooks Koepka take, not going all in, but if you're making a bunch of lineups, I wouldn't leave an $8,100 Siwoo Kim out of this. Like we've seen him win playing in a 25th at Sony. He's playing good golf. He finished the year playing good golf. $8,100 in a GPP. I think Siwoo is very, very intriguing as well. All right, 7K range, 75 to 79. What stands out to you here besides Jason Day of all people at $7,800?
Yeah,
How the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, another guy. Is Max Homan for sure in the field? I thought I saw like him say something about he was not going to play. If he's playing, I like Max Homan.
I think, as far as I'm aware, he's in the field because I'm planning on playing him for now. So, yeah.
I just swear I saw something last night about him potentially. I don't know. Anyway, so sixth place here last year, three straight top 20 basically finishes. He finished 21st at American Express, whatever. Max is playing pretty well right now. Corey Connors, he made the cut here last year, finished 45th, playing good golf, hasn't missed a cut since Punta Cana back in September. Has some top 10 sprinkled in there. So I think he's fine. Your boy, Carlos Ortiz, man. Did you play him last week?
I don't want to talk about it.
Did you not?
Not enough.
Because I remember you talking about
it. I liked him a lot as a good GPP play, and I did not play him. I had him in our seasonal league that we're in. If that counts for anything.
It doesn't in the short
term. I know. It doesn't. I know.
So Carlos Ortiz, 25th here last year, 60th the year before that, missed cut, 53rd. So three out of four made cuts. He had he hit it in every fucking bunker you could possibly hit it in Torrey Pines, I believe. He just didn't have a good round. Shot 78 on Sunday, fell way back. He was in the final group, finished 29th. So most people are going to look at that and say, oh, he finished 29th. Well, really, obviously, he did finish 29th. You can't say he didn't finish 29th. But what I'm saying is he was playing really well up to the Sunday round.
He was playing really well to like the eighth or ninth hole. Like he was still in it. So
yeah, he was grinding. He was grinding, and then just everything caught up to him. You know, just hitting it in every bunker. You just can't do that and expect to get up and down. Shit's just going to happen to you. And then two at 7,500. Chris Kirk. He's played here a lot. He did miss the cut here last year, but before that, he was 50th, 11th, 34th, 37th, 76th, 24th. Coming off a 16th place finish at the American Express, was second over in Hawaii at the Sony Open. And then Norlander, man, $7,500. He's never played here, but his last two, he finished second at the Farmers this past week, 12th at the American Express, had four straight missed cuts before that. So he figured something out over in Hawaii, and he shot 65 to open up the Sony Open in Hawaii, and then shot 73 the second day, missed the cut. But I don't know. I like him quite a bit at 75, man. I mean, I don't think that that's going to be a hot take, and I don't expect him to be super low owned, but $7,500, you know, I'm willing to take some chances there.
We're on pretty much the same crew here. Like Homa, I love, sixth last year, 26th year before, playing good golf. Talked about him last week. Going into last week, how he kind of following him on social media, he tells you what's going on and the way things he worked on. And I'm pretty sure he's playing. I think the tweet you saw, he said, I'm going home for the week. He lives in Scottsdale. So I'm pretty sure that's the tweet you saw. I remember seeing that last night too. I guess second guess him, like, wait a minute, but he lives in Scottsdale.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Yeah. So I like Homa quite a bit. I love Ortiz as well. Always GPP only with Ortiz, because when he implodes, he implodes. But a guy that hits it farther than people think, he can play really well at this event. And then I had Kirk and Norlander down as well. Kirk's missed cut last year. I'll take it with a grain of salt, because we got to remember what Kirk was coming back from last year. That was a little different. What we see now is kind of the earlier Kirk, before all the problems and rehab and all that kind of stuff. So I think he's a great play. Norlander, I love. We played him a lot last year. He's a very streaky golfer, so ride him while he's hot. You know, that 12th place at Amex. This course isn't as birdieable as Amex, not like 25 under winners, but I'd compare it more to Amex than to Torrey Pines. Yeah. So like even a 12th place finish at 75, sign me up right now. Let's do it. So he can have some fun here. The only other guy I have here that I wanted to ask you about, and he's coming in off a miscut at the Sony, I believe. But he has a 16th, a 4th, a 5th, a 9th, a 30th, a 33rd, a 43rd, and a 6th here at $7,700 is Matthew Kuchar. He's playing rough golf. He's playing rough right now.
I mean,
he
is like, yeah, he hasn't missed a cut here since 2010. I mean, he hasn't played every year, but I mean, he's, you know, worth a few lineups if you're playing a lot, in my opinion. But I don't know. He hasn't played well at all, really, since the break, since COVID hit. Because he finished second at all the way back at the Genesis Invitational back in basically a year ago, and since then he's not finished better than what, like 22nd, 18th. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you know, obviously, if you get 18th place finish out of him this week, probably not too awful pissed, but I don't know, man. He's in that same boat as like Jason Day. Like, where in the hell is his game at?
True. Yeah, where I can't Brooks's touch, game I can't at?
You know, I mean, it's just it. These guys were perennial shoe-ins for, you know, especially Kuchar, automatic made cut cash game staple. But now it's just I don't know.
Especially at 7,700, you should just like see that and go, okay, plug it in. Let's go.
Right.
It seems so easy. And I'm like, I can't even wrap my, that's why I wrote him down to talk about him for a second. Cause I know he'll get asked about a lot because he's just that guy that people are used to, you know, wearing his daddy Skechers out there and doing his thing. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. 7K to 7,400. And I won't read all the ones off I have, but I have a rather long list here. So what do you like?
Yeah, there's plenty here. Brendan Todd, 7,400. I believe this is his first start of the year. He played Sony Open.
I mean, his first time here, I think.
And he played the Tournament Champions, but not his first time. He 2016.
Oh,
he
way back when, yeah.
56th. Missed the cut in 2012, but he's made four straight cuts on tour or whatever. So Brendan Todd, he'll hit it down the middle and keep it out of trouble. Brendan Steele, all about the Brendans here, especially at 7,400. He's coming off, you know, so he's missed two cuts in a row at the Waste Management. But before that, he was third, 16th, 17th, 26th, and 6th. So a lot of really good finishes before his two consecutive missed cuts. I don't know what the deal with the last 2 years for him has been here, but 21st at the American Express and 4th at the Sony Open. He's playing really well right now. Like him quite a bit at 7,400. Been on 7,300. I think he'll be popular. Mm-hmm. Luke List, 7,200. His course history is sketch. His 25th miscut, 26th miscut, miscut, miscut. And I don't know if is Mayo on him. Do you know?
He probably will be. I haven't heard any Mayo content yet this week, but Luke List is usually on his list, especially at that price point.
Right, right. And he's playing good now, too. I mean, 21st at the American Express and then 10th last week. So the guy's playing pretty well. And then Adam Long at 7,100, 8th place finish here last year, missed cut the year before that. He hasn't missed a cut since the Sanderson's Farm back in October, but has a 3rd place finish at Mayakoba, played the American Express. Had a terrible weekend, finished 69th. So, but like, you know, Adam Long, I like his game at this type of golf course. So I believe I'll have a little bit this week. Who you on?
Yeah, I had all those guys written down. So I won't reiterate those, but I agree with all those. The other ones I had written down, though, I think could be fun pivots as well. Rory Sabatini at 7,300 bucks. He's going to be priced the same price as Benny on. He's missed back-to-back missed cuts here, but prior to that 31st or 22nd, coming off a 10th at the Farmers and a 12th at the Amex. I don't mind rolling out some Rory at 73 to kind of mix it up there. Grillo at 73, I've been riding him quite a bit. It's always a putter thing with him, so keep that in mind. But when it comes to ball striking, one of the better ball strikers out there, so you're getting him at $7,300. He's coming in, missed cut here last year, but prior to that, four straight made cuts at this event. Missed the cut at the Farmers, but then 37th, 47th, 8th. Playing really good golf. So I think he's intriguing at 73 as well in a GPP. A guy I'm going to continue to play as long as they do not price him up, which is silly to me, is Johnny Huh. He's made five straight cuts here, including a sixth back in 2016. And he finished 65th last week on 21st the week before at the Amex. So I'll keep riding him out there at 72. A guy I'm surprised you did not mention. And I know we have not seen much of him this year. He hasn't played since the Sony where he shot 65th, 17th at Tournament of Champions. But he finished 47th in his debut here last year at $7,100. Sebastian Munoz, thoughts, please.
Yeah, I was looking at him. I'm just not. I don't know. It's not really feeling it. That's a really good reason. I mean, played here once, finished 47th. I don't know. He's been up and down. Not a bad GPP play, I guess. But I'm not on him.
Yeah, and then two more. If you want course history, it's not current form, but course history, Marty Party Laird's made 9 of 10 cuts here of late with a 9th, 7th, 5th, and 3rd thrown in there in his 9 made cuts. He's 7K. And the other guy that I actually used as a as my one and done at the Amex didn't quite work out as I planned, unfortunately, as he finished 53rd after a 7th at Sony. But he's made 4 or 5 cuts, including a 61st last year's Patton Kizzire at 7,000. So if you're looking for low-owned or low-priced GPP plays, there's a lot to like in this low 7K range for sure. Speaking of a lot to like, I stopped taking notes after a certain amount, but there's a ton in the 6K range. This is why you can go stars and scrubs this week. So what do you like in the 6K range?
Yeah, there's a lot of names down here, that's for sure. I think Chingale is okay at 69. I mean, his course history coming in is five straight missed cuts, but he did finish 12th there in 2014. He has played better of late. 18th place finish last week. Hasn't missed a cut since Bermuda back in November. So that's four straight made cuts on tour. Again, $6,900. But I mean, there's guys like Matt Jones been playing well. Joel Dahlman's down here. I haven't really been keeping up with him. Stewie Cink, $6,800. I'm not saying play all these guys. I'm just mentioning some names here. Harry Higgs is in this range. The guy that, I mean, like the one guy that I think is very targetable here is Sam Ryder. I mentioned him last week and my dumbass didn't play him. But finished 10th. You know, he was in the, I think the second to last or third to last group with Rory, shot 72 on Sunday, even par, finished 10th, 47th the week before that, the American Express, $6,500. He's made two cuts in a row at this golf tournament. Finishes aren't great, 55th and 60th, but again, we're talking about $6,500 guy here. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, there's, like I said, plenty of names here. I don't really, I'll let you go through most of them since I stole all of your below 7,500 guys.
It's fine. Like Matt Jones will be popular. He's playing good golf, missed the cut here last year, but five straight made cuts. He's made three straight cuts to start the season. He's at least looks like a cut maker here. JT Poston as well. When it comes to course history, a 37th and a 26th, finished 18th last week at the Farmers. He's in play. I love Stu Goat at 68 to make the cut type situation, maybe make a run, but $6,800 is pretty strong there. Hans back below 7K, coming off a rough week last week, so he's intriguing. Nick Taylor, $6,800. If you want to talk about form, let me pull up Nick Taylor here. He's made four of six cuts here, but coming with a 47th at the Amex, 11th at the Sony, 29th at Tournament of Champions. So that kind of is intriguing. Your boy, Harry Higgs, has actually played well of late. Where is his stuff right here? 25th here last year. He's made both cuts so far this year. 65th at Torrey, 32nd at the Sony. So he's $6,700. A guy I probably will be playing since his debut here, but 18th last week, 16th at the Amex. And I played him at the Amex for sure, is Bo Hogue at $6,700. He's one of my favorite plays down here, along with Mark Hubbard at 66. Ninth here last year. He's made all three cuts here. He's a birdie machine. You mentioned Sam Ryder. Stewart's down here. Will Gordon's down here at 63. Sung Jang has played well here last year. He's 63. So there's lots of ways to go. Like, I'll recap my favorite ones, but there's legit options down here. So you can mix and match and have some fun with the big boys up top, as you could say. All right, let's recap things, Jesse. Who's your favorite play 10K and above?
Rory.
I'm going to go with Webb, but you can't really go wrong. Favorite 9K play? You better take your boy.
I'm going to have to take my boy, Willie Zalatoris.
I'm going to take Berger at 96. 8K range, go with two.
Horschel and Woodland. I'm just going to stick right there in the middle.
Yeah, I'll probably go Bubba and Usti, but I love that range. 7,500 to 79, go with two.
Homa and Norlander.
I'll go Homa and Ortiz. 7,000 to 74, go two.
Steele and Long.
Yeah, both very good. I'll go Johnny and Sebastian Munoz. 6K, go with your two favorite.
Tringale and Ryder.
I'll go with Bo Hogue and Mark Hubbard. So lots and lots to like down there. If you're starting a cash game this week, three guys to start your cash game lineup with.
I mean, I believe Woodland is getting there to cash viable. Sungjae every week. I would put Chris Kirk pretty close there, just given his course history of all those made cuts. And then obviously like coming off the missed cut. But again, like you said, shit was going on last year, playing very well right now.
Yeah, I got Berger, Woodland, and Homa. I almost went Kirk as well, but Berger, Woodland, Homa as a starting point here. Like, honestly, I usually don't go 6K in cash, but like Stewart Cink or something like that, I feel relatively comfortable with. So something to think about. GPP, three guys to start your GPP out with.
I got Rory, Billy Ho, and Sam Ryder.
I like that. I'm going to go with Usti, Bubba, and Ortiz. Now you can decide how high you want to go and how low you want to go after that. But I think those three, ownership wise, GPP appealed to me in a big way. All right, picks to win. This should be a fun week because, you know, there's a lot of class here, but there's some sneaky value plays here. Like Max Homa at 50-1, like he's going to come through here pretty soon. Woodland's 50-1. Anything stand out to you?
Well, I'm going to start off with this over in Saudi Arabia. I like to go Bryson in that. Shout out to my boy Ben Eubank, if you're watching. Bryson and John Rahm.
The double dip.
Yeah. The parlay, I don't know what it pays, but, I mean, hard to see that not cashing. If you're talking about just the Phoenix Open, Woodland at 50, I think is interesting. Homa at 50 as well. Got some interest. Is that even how you say it?
They're interesting.
Whatever. There was one other guy I was looking for. Oh yeah. Where the fuck is Zalatoris? Oh, there he is. 40.
Yep.
Go ahead and start touting that. 40-1.
Yep, you gotta be on your boy. You can't let him win without you touting him. Yep. That'd be an absolute shame.
Right.
But there's a ton to like here. I think Berger at 18 even has a little bit of value. Wouldn't be shocked if he comes through. I know the Kevin writes it up, and I know Dyer does a lot of the top 20s. I mentioned it a lot. There's some intriguing top 20 type material down here in the plus 100 and beyond. So like Johnny Huss plus 125, I'd throw some down on that. Sebastian Munoz at 100, Luke List at 100. There's a lot you could go with. Bo Hoag at plus 200, find a 20-1 there and have some fun. So. Lots to like this week. I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be cool to have fans there. I'm curious how it's going to feel, though, because we're used to this place being just a circus. Right. So that'll be interesting. But all in all, it'll be fun to get waste management going because that means we have Pebble next week. We also have the Super Bowl this weekend. Who you got, Super Bowl?
Dude, I just can't root against Mahomes and company.
Yeah, Chiefs by double digits.
And I'm a fanboy because he's been my keeper since he got in the league and, you know, my season long league. So it's like, you know, I've become a fan. Hey, by the way, too, if you're still listening, you may want to keep listening. I watched the Tiger documentary.
Oh, okay. So this is going to go a little longer today. I like this. So what's your thoughts?
I don't know, man. Like,
feels dirty.
Yeah, it did. You know, I knew all this shit, right? It was. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, the best part was looking back and remembering how fucking awesome he was at playing golf in certain stretches from like particularly 01, 02, and then fucking playing on a broken leg at Torrey, going and just winning that son of a bitch. And the one of the cooler things was Stevie Williams on there saying, "Hey, we probably just need to call this Tiger after he hits that shot off the." Cart path they hear in audible, like whatever. And he's like, no, fuck you. I'm winning this, you know? So that shit was cool. You know, the mistress shit, you know, whatever. Yeah, I hate it. I hate it for him because, you know, but
we're just digging back up old stuff.
You know, you make your bed.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you're going to lay. So I don't know, man.
I thought of when they're going, he'd fly in and party with Chuck and Michael. And he's like a nerd in the group. They're like, he's a nerd in the group. I thought it was, we knew Earl was an asshole, but this made an even bigger one to me. I was like, oh, like having the camper at the golf course, like, wow. Like, no wonder Tiger learns some things. Like,
yeah. Like,
hello. So, yeah, that stuff was kind of shocking, but overall,
I tell you what fucked Tiger up more than anything else was his parents just being like overly protective of him, which I get to a certain extent. He was an only child. So, right? He's an only child. Yeah. So, and then obviously, too, his dad thinks he's the second coming of Christ. I mean, like literally, you know, he's talking about him being the best thing to ever happen to humanity. I'm like, yeah, that's a lot of pressure to put on a kid, man.
Well, I mean, you look at him when they showed that footage, he was on the, was it Carson or whatever? He looked so like, I don't even want to be here right now. Right. His dad's just like, oh, like dance monkey dance.
Or when that dude had the microphone in his face and he was like sitting in his dad's lap and like he's like, you know, he's 2 years old, you know.
Yep. What do you want me to say?
Right. It's just, it was that, all that shit was odd to me. But either way, man, you know, it was fun. The best part to me was reliving just
how good he was.
Yeah. It's easy to forget that. It's easy to forget how good he was. with all the shit that goes on now. But
yeah, I'm looking forward to someday the first girlfriend that he had to break up with that had the letter from him still has that letter.
Yeah, I saw that.
I can't wait to see how much she sells that for. Like, you know, it's going to be going somewhere someday.
It's
got his signature on it and everything. Like, it's coming out.
Yeah, I bet that's something that she herself never sells. It would be something that
after she dies.
Yeah, her kids or something would, because that to her is like, you could tell it was like
special. There's so many what ifs, of course. Like, he's still been amazing and everything. But what if he stuck with her? Like, is he still as dominant? Because there's part of him that felt like he needed to go out and do the things in Vegas to be dominant. it was a weird dynamic with that man.
Yeah. I also too wish they would have kind of talked a little bit more about the whole Navy SEAL deal, man. I feel like they kind of just glossed over that.
That would basically messed his whole career up.
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge deal, you know. But the way that I kind of relate that is, you know, Tiger almost conquered the game of golf, right? Mm-hmm. Especially during that stretch when he was with the Navy SEALs. So, like, he needed something else to do to kind of occupy his mind, more or less.
Keep the blood flowing.
And that was it.
It's crazy, like, hearing those guys talk about he's actually, like, they're hitting him, like, purposely, like, beating him up. And they're, like, just don't, like, hit his hands.
Yeah.
It was freaking crazy, man.
I'm firing paintballs at him.
Oh, man, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. But, all right. Well, I'm glad you got to see it. It was definitely something. There's definitely something. Let's put it that way. But that'll wrap us up this week. Any closing thoughts on the waste management? Any strategy talk?
I don't. We got one comment there. It looks like on YouTube. So,
one A golfer, B golfer, C golfer. Total combined winnings determines winner.
I don't know. Chase on.
Yeah, because I don't know who's in your groupings for Twitter, A, B's, and C's. Like, I know what he's talking about. I know you do too. There's usually a specified grouping,
right?
A, B, and C.
Well, so, we're happy to help you out with that, Chase. If you're still listening or whatever, just hit one of us up on Twitter.
Yeah, Jesse's at DFS Golf Gods. I'm at BDintric. The podcast is at Always Press DFS. Good luck this week, everybody. It should be a fun one. As you can tell, we were a little goofier on this show because it's the Waste Management Open. So enjoy your week. Catch you guys later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur Adapt Collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.